39. On April 6th, the day after I spoke with Trump, the president began the day on a cheery note. "Light at the end of the tunnel," he tweeted around 8 a.m. Later that day, American deaths rose to 10,746. One of Trump's allies, UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson, came down with the virus and was moved into intensive care. It was also becoming clear the virus was disproportionately affecting minority communities. Counties that are majority black have 3 times the rate of infections and almost 6 times the rate of deaths as counties where white residents are the majority, the Washington Post reported on April 7th. In the 4-week period ending April 9th, more than 17 million Americans had filed for unemployment, Labor Department figures showed. On April 10th, Trump predicted the U.S. death count would be lower than the minimum predicted by the task force's models. "The minimum number was 100,000 lives, and I think we'll be substantially under that number," he said. On April 11th, the death toll from the coronavirus in the United States climbed above 20,000. The United States surpassed Italy as the country with the most coronavirus fatalities in the world. On Sunday, April 12th, Fauci was asked about a story that Trump had been too slow to act on the virus during an interview on CNN. "If you had a process that was ongoing and started mitigation earlier, you could have saved lives," Fauci said. He added, "If we had, right from the very beginning, shut everything down, it may have been different. But there was a lot of pushback for shutting everything down back then." Several hours later, on Sunday evening, Trump retweeted a tweet that suggested Fauci should be fired, sparking widespread speculation and worry about Fauci's fate. Trump later told me he had a good relationship with Fauci. Monday afternoon, the president fought back against the criticism in a freewheeling 2-hour press briefing that began with a campaign ad-style video touting his decisive action on the virus. Answering questions from reporters, Trump declined to acknowledge any mistakes and said his administration was way ahead of schedule in its response. When asked what he had done to prepare hospitals and ramp up testing with the extra time Trump said he bought by being ahead of schedule, the president called the reporter disgraceful. He alternated between blaming Democratic governors for failures and claiming he had total authority over the national response. "When somebody is the president of the United States, the authority is total," Trump said, "and that's the way it's got to be. It's total." The next day, Trump said decisions about when to reopen would be largely in the hands of the governors. "The federal government would be there to help," he said, "but the governors are going to be opening up their states. They're going to declare when." I reached Trump at the White House about 10 p.m. Monday, April 13th, to follow up with my questions on the 14 areas to tackle on the virus that we had gone over on April 5th. He wanted to talk about Mueller, impeachment, and the news media rather than the policy details of his administration's virus response. "But you have a series of problems," I said. I went to the list of 14 areas of issues that needed to be integrated in a national response for examples. "Testing." "We have good testing," he said. That day, the Washington Post reported shortages of personal protective equipment, or PPE, and swabs needed to perform tests across the country. "The country needed broad, rapid tests to reopen," the Post said. "But in an analysis of testing numbers over the past 2 weeks, the data suggest that our ability to establish such a system has become less likely, not more." I asked if he had talked to Bill Gates yet. "You will never regret listening to somebody, sir," I said. "Gates," Trump said, "and I saw him on some show and read something that he said. And one problem is, if it was up to him, he'd keep the country closed for 2 years. And you won't have a country anymore." "You've got lots of economic problems, too," I said. "How about the unemployment benefits and those Small Business Administration loans?" "Those are doing great, Bob. The vaccines? We probably already have the vaccine, Trump said, although the science was far from definitive at the time. You know the biggest problem, though? You have to test it, so you have to make sure. It kills the virus, but you've got to make sure it doesn't kill the person. Can you imagine? You vaccinate 100 million people and find out it's poison, right? What about China, where the virus originated? He wanted to talk about trade. Well, he said, nobody's been tougher, but we just made a $250 billion trade deal where they've got to buy our stuff. As part of the Phase 1 trade deal in January, China had agreed to increase purchases from the U.S. by $200 billion over 2 years. He said the Mueller investigation had been an attempted takedown of the President of the United States. I say this to you directly, I said. What happened in the past, you have to... It's getting in the way, I think, of you doing your job on the virus. This was an attempted and failed coup, Trump said. I don't think that's what it is. There's a momentum, I said, to an investigation, trying to offer an analogy. I wrote 4 books on George W. Bush's wars. I spent hours with Bush. He was driven by a belief that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. There was a momentum and belief a war would be easy. Didn't he come out terribly in those books? Trump asked. The 4 books had traced Bush's actions after 9/11 and the origins of the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. The 3rd book was called State of Denial because he got into denial, I said. He spent all that time with you, Trump said, and you made him look like a fool, okay, in my opinion. No, 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 I replied. He had his say. He didn't object. I hope I'm not wasting a lot of time, because to be honest, I can think of other things I'd rather be doing. I understand, I said, and my job is to find the best obtainable version. Ugh, Trump said, and in the end, you'll probably write a lousy book. What can I say? I respect you as an author, but if that's an example... Okay, I said, so your big decision now is what to do with the virus. I'm comfortable. He said, I'm comfortable. I'm comfortable. You won't even know if it's a good decision probably by the time you come out with the book. Maybe it'll go away. But it's possible you won't even know about it. But I want to describe the process, I said. I asked about Fauci and Birx and how many other experts he'd consulted. Well, you know, Fauci got it wrong, Trump replied. Fauci said no problem in late February. Trump was partially correct. Fauci had said on the Today Show, right now the risk is still low, but this could change. But I like him, Trump said. He likes me. We have a good relationship. We'll find out. He's become a symbol to lots of people, I said. Well, he is, Trump said. But don't forget, the media don't say that he got it wrong. They don't ever print that he got it wrong. If I want, I can do that. But I'm not looking to do that to him. But he did get it wrong. I got it right. I put up a wall. I put up a ban on China. He was referring to his restrictions on foreigners flying into the United States from China. I turned out to be right. Almost everybody was against me. Took a lot of heat. As this book has shown earlier, the 5 key national security and health officials, including Fauci, supported the restrictions. In our interview April 13th, Trump continued, "It's so easily transmissible you wouldn't even believe it. I was in the White House a couple of days ago, meeting of 10 people in the Oval Office, and a guy sneezed, innocently. Not a horrible, just a sneeze. The entire room bailed out, okay? Including me, by the way." You're risking getting it, of course, I said, the way you move around and have those briefings and deal with people. Are you worried about that? No, I'm not. I don't know why I'm not. I'm not, he said. Why? I don't know. I'm just not. Shifting the subject, Trump returned to one of his favorite topics. Boeing was in real trouble, he said. It's not like somebody's going out to buy 50 planes. They screwed up in their process, I said. Trump, too, was struggling with his process. So you've got the problem that Boeing had, magnified 10,000 times. I again told Trump his handling of the virus was, in my view, the leadership test of a lifetime. In terms of the importance of the decision, certainly, he said, agreeing. But Boeing, boy, what they've done to that company, you have no idea. It's hard to believe, actually. And so you've got your process, I said. You make an... Trump blew a frustrated-sounding raspberry. Important point, I finished. By the time my book comes out, I may not know the outcome, but I want to know the process. What's your timing? He asked, referring to the release of the book. I want to come out in September or October. So, if it's a bad book... No, think of it. If it's a bad book, you're right in front of my election. That's a beauty. That's terrible. Trump said my last book, Fear, was horrendous, but that was my fault. I would have loved to have seen you, but they didn't tell me you were calling. Now it's a much different ball game. When you called me last time, I was under siege with the Mueller investigation, he said. I had been unable to reach Trump for an interview for Fear, though I tried to make contact through six of his closest advisors. Okay, I hope you treat me better than Bush, because you made him look like a stupid moron, which he was. Sir, I said, you're going to be judged by how you handle the virus. I disagree, he said. It'll be a part of it, but I've done a lot of other things too. It's so monumental, I said. I agree, he said. It's a war. It is a war. It's like being attacked. But I'm not going to be judged entirely by that. The next evening, Lindsey Graham appeared on Fox News and defended Trump's handling of the coronavirus crisis. The president has over-delivered when it comes to supplies to the states, hospital beds, ventilators, you name it, Graham told host Sean Hannity. Trump called Graham after watching the segment. You're your own best messenger, and you're also your own worst enemy in the daily virus press conferences, Graham said. I'm getting 9 million watching, Trump said. I don't doubt people are watching, Graham said. Just control the message. People will have a hard time attacking you if you follow the advice of Birx and Fauci on health care and stay in close touch with the governors about a plan to open the economy. I'm the one that decides everything, Trump said. Mr. President, all your haters would love nothing more than you make all the decisions, Graham said. He had to listen to his outside advisors on the task force he'd assembled. The more buy-in you can get, the wider and deeper net you throw, the better outcomes you'll get. Trump was focused on China. It was clear to Graham that Trump absolutely believed Xi had lied about the virus and personally misled him. It was hard for Trump, who liked personal relationships and liked it when heads of state were his friends. He'd felt he had a good relationship with Xi, but now he and the entire Republican Party had turned on China. Trump believed that China's decision to withhold information had put him in the bind he was in today, Graham thought. Trump had recently had a call with Putin, who'd called China the largest out-of-control country on the planet. The wheels were turning on China, Graham saw. Trump and Putin spoke on April 9th and 10th. The public statements about the calls released by the White House and the Kremlin did not mention China. Graham viewed the next 2 weeks between mid-April and May 1st as a critical time to make progress against the virus. They'd have to come up with a testing regime that could be built out quickly, he believed, or they were going to lose the whole summer. Graham told Trump again that his opponent wasn't Biden. It's the coronavirus. His presidency would be defined by this. He said Trump would win the election if, in October, we've got a vaccine around the corner and therapies on the shelf and we have been doing a lot of testing and there hasn't been a major outbreak and people are beginning to go to football games in small numbers and the economy's back. But if we go too far too quick and there's another outbreak and the economy falters, You're in trouble. As April drew on, Trump started to tell advisers he had had enough of the shutdown. We have got to reopen the country, he said. We can't do this. This is doing irreparable damage. I am not going to sit back and preside over the funeral of the greatest country in the world, Trump said. You guys have to realize, you're my medical experts, but my job is to look at a lot of different factors. The president had developed a complex relationship with Fauci, looking to him for advice, even though Fauci was sometimes out of step with Trump's positions and rhetoric. Tony, I appreciate what you got to do, Trump told him at one point. You gotta do what you gotta do. But I'm the president of the United States. I gotta put a lot of factors into my decision. Trump, at the urging of Treasury Secretary Mnuchin, finally decided the economy needed to be reopened. He sent Fauci, Birx, and Redfield to work to develop a plan for reopening the country's schools and businesses. Okay, Fauci said, so if that's the case, we've got to have some sort of structure to how we reopen America. I don't know how you're going to do it, Trump said. You guys can do what you want, you know, figure out a way to do it, but we cannot stay closed. We've got to reopen. The president was emphatic about it, sounding almost as though he were pleading with his public health advisors. You know, we've got to do it, Trump said. We've really got to do it, Deb. We've got to do it, Tony. We just gotta do it. Fauci, Birx, and Redfield worked on a plan. Governors could allow schools, businesses, and other public spaces to reopen in a three-phase process once their states showed a 14-day downward trajectory in coronavirus cases. When the health experts finally brought their plan to Trump in the Oval Office, Fauci warned against the possibility governors might rush to reopen too quickly. We really gotta be careful, Fauci said. We can't be leapfrogging over one to get to the other. Because if we do, there's going to be a danger of a rebound. And the one thing you don't want, Mr. President, is to try to open and then rebound and have to close again. Because that's going to be very embarrassing. I hear you, Trump said. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think we'll be fine. At one point, Trump asked what the transition plan should be called. Reopening America again? Opening America again? What sounds better? Trump asked. Everyone seemed to know that it was a marketing slogan, and Trump would decide on it himself. On April 16th, Trump announced the plan developed by his medical advisors to reopen in a phased process. Our nation is engaged in a historic battle against the invisible enemy, Trump said. To win this fight, we have undertaken the greatest national mobilization since World War II. Based on the latest data, our team of experts now agrees that we can begin the next front in our war, which we're calling Opening America Up Again. The president's announcement was overshadowed in the next day's newspapers by grim economic news brought about by the shutdown. U.S. unemployment claims rise to 22 million, a banner headline on the front page of the Washington Post read the next day. Broad shutdown pushes Americans to economic edge, was the top headline in the New York Times. Governors rushed to restart their states' economies following the release of the administration's plan, even though many did not meet the criteria for reopening. Georgia Governor Brian Kemp had, on April 20th, said he would allow gyms, hair salons, bowling alleys, and tattoo parlors to open in 4 days. Trump opposed the move in public. I told the governor of Georgia, Brian Kemp, that I disagree strongly with his decision to open certain facilities which are in violation of the Phase 1 guidelines for the incredible people of Georgia, he said at the April 22nd task force briefing. But the next day, Trump changed course and began praising governors who were reopening their states. You see, states are starting to open up now, Trump said on April 23rd, and it's very exciting to see. I think it's very awe-inspiring. We're coming out of it, and we're coming out of it well. By the end of April 30th, states had reopened or announced plans to reopen within the next week, even though most were showing more new cases or a higher percentage of positive tests than 2 weeks earlier, and therefore did not meet White House criteria for reopening. The virus claimed the lives of more than 50,000 Americans in April alone, bringing deaths to 63,000 total. Still, the president sounded optimistic and upbeat in public. "It's gonna go," Trump said at a meeting with industry executives on April 29th. "It's gonna leave. It's gonna be gone. It's gonna be eradicated." Relations between the United States and North Korea appeared to worsen over time. Efforts to continue negotiations among diplomats for the two countries in Stockholm in early April 2019 had resulted in failure. "If the United States is not well prepared, we don't know what terrible events will happen," North Korea's lead negotiator Kim Jong-il said afterward. North Korea had threatened the U.S. with a Christmas gift in late 2019. In March 2020, Trump had sent a letter about the coronavirus to Kim Jong-un. Trump, speaking in an April 18th press briefing, said that Kim had replied back. "I received a nice note from him recently. It was a nice note," Trump said. "I think we're doing fine." North Korea's foreign ministry, however, denied Kim had sent any such note. In April and May 2020, Kim mysteriously disappeared for a 20-day period, prompting widespread speculation about his health and whereabouts. At an April 30th news conference, Trump declined to discuss the situation. "Well, I understand what's going on, and I just can't talk about Kim Jong-un right now," Trump said. "I just hope everything is going to be fine. But I do understand the situation very well." When Kim reemerged in late May, so too did North Korea's plans to continue developing both nuclear and conventional weapons. State media reported that Kim had presided over a meeting in which the nation's military had set forth new policies for further increasing the nuclear war deterrence of the country. The state media report, accompanied by a photo of Kim sitting at a dais, added North Korea had also undertaken measures for considerably increasing the firepower strike ability of the artillery pieces of the Korean People's Army. Later, North Korea demolished a liaison office it shared with South Korea, a de facto embassy, and threatened to send troops into the demilitarized zone. The office had been closed because of the coronavirus, but its destruction seemed an ominous, provocative act. Several times, Trump underscored for me what he said he believed was his real achievement with Kim. "No war. There was no war. No war." Pompeo thought the U.S. was in a reasonably good position with North Korea, though there was no certainty. Pompeo noted that given all the talks and letters and back and forth, Kim never once, directly or indirectly, raised the issue of the 30,000 U.S. troops stationed in South Korea. Kim wanted them there, Pompeo concluded, because they were a restraint on China. That was, yet again, another reason to keep the troops there.